With a dynamite selection each and every time, yeah.
You are tuned to Booked on KDNK. My name is Gavin, and this is a new show. We will try to carry the mantle forward from what we had with Everything Under the Sun, the old weekly program from the Soper Sun staff. And you'll hear from Will Grambois and other Soper Sun reporters on this very show in the weeks ahead. Today, my guests are Brent Gardner-Smith from Aspen Journalism and Lucas Turner, KDNK's brand new news director. We'll start with Brent, who joins me now live in the studio. Thanks for being here, Brent.
Hey, you bet. Great to be here.
Good to see you. And very excited about what Aspen Journalism has done. Many of our listeners, of course, very familiar with you and your work. But let's imagine there's someone listening right now who doesn't know anything about Aspen Journalism. How did it start? What do you guys do?
Well, we're a local, independent, nonprofit, investigative, and collaborative news organization. We were founded in 2011, and we raise revenue to release reporters. We raise revenue like other nonprofits do, and then we spend that revenue on producing journalism by paying good journalists to go forth and do good stories. And we do that in collaboration with other news organizations. We've worked with KDNK in the past, and the many people may recognize most of our reporting over the last several years has centered on water and rivers, and we've been doing that in collaboration with the Aspen Times and the Glenwood Springs Post Independent, as well as other newspapers in the Swift Communications newspaper chain, the Vail Daily, the Summit Daily, Steamboat Pilot. And so we give our material away to those newspapers. We say we trade our good reporting for their excellent audience, and therefore we reach more people. One of our mottos is that well-informed citizens make better decisions. So we're considered an educational organization by the IRS. That's where our nonprofit status comes from, and our aim is to educate people, and we do that through good investigative and in-depth and hopefully insightful journalism.
And when you work with those other papers, does it kind of vary? Sometimes a story comes completely out of your shop. Sometimes you work with a specific editor at the other papers.
Well, our approach over the last several years, we've been mainly working with the Aspen Times, and we've set up an approach for our journalism to what I call take a investigative beat-centric approach, or an investigative approach to beat reporting. So you define a beat such as water, and then you define the organizations that are important and relevant to that beat. I've been covering, for example, the Colorado Water Conservation Board, the state agency that manages the state's water planning and policy. And so I would follow that organization as well as the River District in Glenwood Springs and other local water issues. Maybe it's through the town of Carbondale or the city of Aspen. But if there's an agency working on water, I try and cover it. And then as stories come up on that beat, I'll pitch them basically or let the editor know, hey, got a good story coming up on this day. And they'll say, great, you know, looking forward to reading it. We'll make room. They read it. They edit it. They make a decision to publish it. And then it ends up in front of a reader. So hope that answers your question.
Yeah. And so typically if it's in the Summit paper, it more likely went through an editorial process at the Times. I mean, then that's just shared.
The Times right now is our sort of gateway newspaper, if you will. Most of the stuff goes through there, but we also have the ability to go to other papers directly and say, hey, there's a good story in your backyard, Vail. Would you be interested in the story? In fact, we're going to be doing more of that. We've been working on a grant from the CU Water Desk.
Nice.
And that's almost complete. We've gotten nothing but green lights as we look ahead. And so that will help us give us some money to pay other freelance reporters and potentially, say, set up a freelance reporter in Steamboat Springs who could help cover water for the Steamboat Pilot. A lot of it depends with the papers as to do they already have someone on staff who's covering water and rivers, so it's would be duplicative, so maybe we don't do that, but another paper doesn't have a reporter who has the time or interest in that subject, and so that can open the door like that. And we also work on an informal basis. We work editor to editor, newsroom to newsroom without a written agreement. We try and keep the executive directors and the publishers out of the equation.
Hey, now. So with a subject as important as water, you know, these papers are under-resourced, they've got to be thirsty for this coverage.
Well, they have been finding that the readers really like it. I'll let that go. I'm just going to let that go, Gavin. The readers are thirsty for water coverage, I will say. They find that the stories track well on the website, and people have a lot of interest in it. And it is a subject that is not as easy to cover as others. It takes a lot of time to figure out what they're really talking about. And so we do have now a level of expertise after 5 years of fairly intense beat reporting that we do know what we're reporting on. And, you know, not to put any reporter at any daily newspaper down, it's a specialized subject.
Right.
It's like covering education. Unless you've been doing that for a while, you can't just drop in and start doing it. It's hard.
Well, and so you've become a subject expert, and I know that you do a lot of river trips, really, to do additional research.
Really, the water report is just cover, thin cover to say to someone, yeah, so listen, I got to go rafting for a week. And, of course, I learned that from the master, Steve Skinner, your former GM.
Yeah.
Steve and I have done a lot of rafting together. It's really been a great reporting project. And it also, to be honest, has helped inform the reporting in two ways. It is a joy to be able to, again, sort of justify going on a river trip. But the photos have helped quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
A publisher or an editor, rather, wants a good story and a nice photo to illustrate it. So that's easy. The other is it really does give you some perspective on where these rivers are and what landscapes they service. And I know it sounds like I'm just justifying going rafting, but
No, I was teasing you. Well, so you guys, Aspen Journalism has also done some other coverage that's had impact in addition to the water reporting. I read a great story that you guys produced that was, I believe, in the Aspen Sojourner magazine last year about the folks who work in the Aspen hotels and in the hospitality industry who are immigrants, right? Was that the focus?
Yeah, the focus was what's it like to work in the shadows. And we know that Aspen's economy depends on this labor force. And so Ali Margo, who is writes the Princess column in the Aspen Times and does a lot of other freelance work, she sort of masquerades as the princess. She's actually quite a capable reporter. So we asked her to dig into this topic, and she did so in collaboration with Aspen Sojourner, which deserves a lot of credit for, they're basically a visitor magazine, and they're in the hotel rooms. And so it's a big story about, hey, there's a good chance your maid is an illegal immigrant or an undocumented worker, I suppose, to be more precise. And so it took some courage, I think, for them to publish that. And Ali did a great job exploring what it's like, both from the worker's perspective and the employer's perspective, and the sort of, culture that we have, economic culture, societal culture in our resort communities of, the employers need the workers and the workers want to work. And there's a pretty easy loophole if the two of you want to get together and make that happen. That's how Aspen works. Aspen depends on that. And so it's a good story.
Well, you've obviously worked with different freelancers, but I feel like there's big news for Aspen Journalism fans in terms of your big new staff expansion. So tell us about your new hire. I mean, this is a big moment.
Well, the luxury of having only, one person in the newsroom, when you get another, you can say you've doubled the size of your news organization.
There you go.
So there's 975 reporters at the New York Times, just to keep this in perspective. But Heather Sackett recently graduated from CU's Environmental School of Journalism, got her master's degree there, and she's also had a lot of experience at the Telluride Planet and Denver Post and other news organizations. So she has moved to Carbondale, and she's going to work for us in the role of managing editor and water reporter, help us with the water reporting, help us grow this collaboration with the Swift Network. And so we're just delighted that we have someone we can point to as a good, capable, experienced professional journalist in the newsroom. We're also doing a freelance project with Elizabeth Stewart Severy, who's the environmental reporter at Aspen Public Radio.
Yeah.
We got a grant and was able to pay her on a freelance basis to cover biodiversity issues in the Valley, and she's done three stories with that, which is great. We're open to doing it at KDNK too.
Yeah.
But Elizabeth was available. So it's great to expand the newsroom. It's been a long time goal. We are 8 years old, and we've been a sort of a demonstration project proving that this nonprofit news model can work in Aspen. We're one of only three nonprofit news organizations in the state besides Colorado Independent and Chalkbeat outside of the public radio stations.
Right, right.
So we've wanted to prove the concept, and I think we have proven the concept. People notice the work, enjoy the work. We've had an impact. The collaborative news organizations appreciate it. I mean, when we started, it wasn't clear that the Aspen Times or Aspen Public Radio would accept journalism from an outside source.
Right.
And we've developed the trust and I think the expertise to do it and do it well. So it's working. So yeah, it's nice to grow.
And that growth also shows that there's support financially for this work. And of course, Aspen Journalism does accept donations through their website, aspenjournalism.org. The latest story from Heather is residents of Marble and Crystal say 13-mile Lead King Loop is being loved to death. It's a great story. Take a look, aspenjournalism.org. Meanwhile, I want to let folks know, Brent, that you've got a pretty exciting special guest coming to town. Looks like this is Tuesday, August 13th. Tell us more about this event.
So Dick Toefel is the president of ProPublica. He's the founding general manager. ProPublica was founded in 2008. They're probably the largest nonprofit investigative journalism organization of sort of the modern era, or at least founded in the last 10 to 15 years. And they're based in New York. They now have a Chicago bureau and a Washington bureau. They have a $40 million budget, a 75-person newsroom. They've won 5 Pulitzer Prizes. They're really best in class when it comes to nonprofit investigative journalism organizations.
And really focused on abuse of power, spotlighting wrongdoing, trying to, you know, build and in some cases erode public trust in government and other institutions. And really important work, because it's the kind of thing that pisses people off.
It's really good work. I had the pleasure, as part of getting my master's degree in journalism, I went back to ProPublica in 2010 for 4 months as kind of the world's oldest intern. I was a paid intern, and I didn't work in the news department. I worked in the communications department, but I worked directly under Dick Toefel. And, you know, Dick's sort of the coach of the organization, if you will, the general manager. He produces the journalism. He oversees everything and gets the job done. So those Pulitzers, you know, in ProPublica's office are as much his as the editor's, in a way. And so it's going to be great to talk with him about his perspective. When I was there, he sat in all the editorial meetings and also served as general counsel for the organization. And so he's involved in a certain level of the production. So it'll be great to talk with him, not only about what it takes to run ProPublica and win 5 Pulitzers, but what his views are on what it would take to run a ProPublica in another community. For example, they just opened a bureau in Chicago with 10 people and $1 million budget. And sort of a good indicator that if you want to start a nonprofit news organization, that's probably what you're going to need to, the level you're going to need to staff it at if you want to do ProPublica work. Aspen Journalism it's a little daunting to say, we're in the same sector, if you will. We're in the same constellation. They're obviously a brighter star. And we want to be a local version of ProPublica. We have a long way to go to get there, I think. But we don't have to change our model or our approach. We just have to grow.
So that event is Making News That Matters, a conversation with Richard Toefel, president of ProPublica. Brent Gardner-Smith will be on stage leading this conversation with Dick. And that's Tuesday, August 13th at Aspen Meadows Albright Pavilion. So that's rain or shine.
Yep.
And so how do people make sure they have a spot?
It's free and it's not really ticketed, but we would like you to RSVP at info@aspenjournalism.org. The room we booked holds about 100 people, so we're hoping to fill it. And if you want to come, info@aspenjournalism.org, just send us a note that you'll be there and this is how many people you want to bring, and we'll make sure you get a seat.
And one last thing I want to ask you is just your own reporting personally at the moment. Anything that's about to, you know, be out in the papers in the next couple of days, or what are some big stories you're watching? I mean, we had we had Zane from the River District was at our booth during Mountain Fair and talked a little bit about some of the things they're facing right now. Seems like there's going to be a lot of news coming out around the Colorado River always. But what are you keeping your eye on right now?
Well, on the website now, you'll find that there's a story about the Colorado Water Conservation Board setting up a series of workshops to talk about demand management or voluntary reduction in use of water for irrigators primarily and large municipal users. And I wrote a story about how they've decided to open up those meetings to the public as opposed to holding them as staff meetings behind closed doors. And so next up, we'll be really taking a close look at, well, okay, when are those meetings and who's on those meetings and how is that process going to unfold. It's a really significant process, probably equivalent in terms of effort and certainly in potential impact to the water system in Colorado as the 2015 process to develop the water plan. So there's another big state water planning process coming that we're hoping to keep a close eye on.
Well, and in terms of how we're doing with snowpack and the general health of the rivers this year, obviously a much better year than last year, do you feel like we're in a place where we can start using the word drought again? Or do we need to keep talking about, you know, aridization, aridification, the idea that drought is a temporary thing that we can recover from, but maybe that word isn't sufficient anymore? What do you take?
Well, experts that I've heard presenting over the last year, really, at various water meetings, or some of the climate experts like Brad Udall, are saying, look, you need to get used to saying aridification. That's the program. That's where we're going. We're going to have 20 to 30% less water. It's going to be hotter. We're going to have less water. The rivers are going to be stressed. Then they also talk about a 20-year running drought, that we are still in this drought that's been ongoing since around 2000. 2018 was one of the worst years on record. This year has been an amazing year. Every meeting you hear the refrain, boy, what a difference a year makes. So that's been good. But I think Brad Udall and others would say, yeah, we had a good year, but aridification is still the watchword.
All right. Well, Brent Gardner-Smith, Aspen Journalism, aspenjournalism.org, the website, and again, Making News That Matters, a conversation with the head guy from ProPublica, Richard Toffel, Tuesday, August 13th at Aspen Meadows Albright Pavilion. More information on the website, aspenjournalism.org. Thanks so much, Brent.
Hey, congratulations on the new show and best of luck. I hope it's still as much fun in week, I don't know, 12?
Yeah, I've got a lot of review copies of books coming, so we'll be talking to a lot of authors nationally and a lot of reporters locally, regionally, and nationally as well. And KD&K has this new partnership with Chalkbeat, with Grand Junction Sentinel, Durango Herald, and with the Colorado Sun, so folks will be hearing more from each of those outlets on KD&K as well. So we're excited.
Great.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
Support for KD&K Community Radio comes from listeners like you and business members, including Sopris Chiropractic, Pressurized Systems, Clear, United Way Battlement to the Bells, and Windwalkers. To become a KD&K business member, go to kdnk.org and click donate, or call 970-963-0139.
You are listening to Booked on KD&K, and my next guest is KD&K's newest staff member, Lucas Turner. Thanks for being here.
I'm super happy to be here.
So this is your first day working at KD&K, not your first time in the building, because you had an internship here several years ago. In the time that you've been involved in radio, tell us a little bit about your work. So how'd you get started with the Colorado Mountain College Student Radio Project?
So I was one of the first students in the Isaacson School for New Media when that first started, just as the new media program. My first class that I went into was actually radio production. That was the very first class I attended. And my instructor, his name is Corby Anderson, mm-hmm. and he actually was running the radio station at the time, sort of teaching, sort of running the new college radio station that they had. And he approached me, I think, in my third semester and said, hey, do you want to run the radio station? Like, it was pretty much just like that. And I had been looking for a job for a while. I think I was 19 years old. And I said, sure, why not? And it was just a part-time, technically station manager position. So I did that for, I guess 5 years. And over the course of that time when I first started, we weren't able to have any live broadcasting. So I was all pre-producing everything and it was taking forever. So one of the main things that I did in that time was figure out how we could update our system to be able to do live broadcasting. So that was kind of a big part of it, and dealing with a lot of shoddy equipment, things breaking down, driving up to radio towers and fiddling with antennas and all that kind of stuff. But later on, I really got more interested and involved in bringing in student DJs and volunteer DJs, just like what happens here. And that was actually why I pushed for us to have live, because it was so much easier than teaching people to pre-produce and edit. I really focused on having a space on campus where students could come and they could broadcast from, training them how to use the boards and all that kind of stuff. And, it was just a lot of that. And that ended up taking up almost all of my time as soon as I started managing volunteers and bringing people in every day. And, you obviously know about everything that goes into keeping a station on air and keeping it legally
compliant
and acceptable. So I really had a lot of work with that, and it ended up leading into, because I was trying to develop these studio spaces, it ended up leading into a lot more audio engineering and learning that side of things. Because after 3 years of managing the station, I was asked to come teach the sound design course. So I did that for 4 semesters.
January 2017, you're made an adjunct instructor at CMC. And what age were you at this point? 22-year-old professor at CMC, and then taught Sound Design 1, Sound Design 2, Intro to Multimedia. I know even I took a photography class up there, and I think we were in pretty much the same space at that point. And it was really exciting for me when I really got the sense of what Radio CMC could do, looking at the files you guys were posting online, right? Like, so I think the audience, there was always a challenge to build an FM audience here with CMC.
Absolutely.
But the content, you've got to, I mean, it's a feather in your cap in your career that you guys put out some amazing stuff, from radio plays, working with the theater folks at CMC, and then obviously other volunteers, and the sheer volume of podcasts and interview shows and music recordings. I mean, I think it was a pretty big accomplishment, especially when you think about how under-resourced the project was. Again, I'm not here to cast aspersions on CMC for their decisions in the long run, but that was a pretty good run you had there for a while.
Yeah, and that producing podcasts and producing things that we could just kind of put up on our SoundCloud page, you can still go listen to all of that. So that's one of the things that's kind of cool.
Yep, it's an archive.
You can find the Radio CMC content, but it really did end up kind of heading in that direction. And one of the main reasons was because we were able to directly point to how many plays something got, and that was a lot harder for us to measure on our FM signals.
Exactly.
So we made all kinds of interviews and radio plays, and I think my favorite one might be Dracula out of all of the radio plays that
we
did.
It's really good, folks. You got to check it out.
But that was such a cool collaboration because we worked with the CMC theater program. So these are actual, you know, actors, and they love acting and they get into their characters. And then, you know, combine that with some of the technical knowledge that we had at the radio station. All of that experience creating all of that content is, you know, why I feel confident that I can produce, you know, news stories and stuff like that. But it also kind of led to what happened later on as well with my podcasting, work that I've done.
So tell us about Levelhead Audio. So you launched your own business to support radio and podcasting and production, and then I think you and I spoke on KD&K after you won a big competition. So tell us about that too.
Yeah, so the company now is called CoVenture. It's just right next to KD&K, actually. At the time, it was called Glen X, started by a guy named Altai Chaloon, and I heard about this business pitch competition here, and I was at the Third Street Center, and it was a 4-week process where we had to develop a 30-second pitch and then a 2-minute pitch deck with slides. And then eventually we were in front of a group of quote unquote investors, but the actual prize amount was set already. And one of them was actually Jim Calloway, who was there to actually judge and decide who the money went to. But really that was just focused around helping people create podcasts on their own, whether that means purchasing the equipment themselves and learning how to use it and edit it, or even if it meant that I actually did the recording for them and the editing, or, you know, it was kind of just whatever works for any person. But I just felt like that in a lot of ways, I felt like what you do here at KD&K, and what we do, I guess, here at KD&K is what I should start saying. is, you know, providing local content, because there in the golden age of content, there's so much that you can possibly find, but there's a huge value to things that are local and things that are relevant to you. So I saw a local podcasting network, or just people who are locally creating content, being able to distribute that is, you know, valuable, obviously. So yeah, I mean, that's Levelhead Audio, I guess, in a nutshell, but I also help people with live sound and stuff like that. So I'm really excited to bring those skills and that experience here to KD&K as well.
Well, we've been looking at the data for a new grant that KD&K received that's around doing membership and subscription experimentation with other outlets. I mentioned this in my conversation with Brent, that we're now going to be partnering with Chalkbeat, Colorado Sun, Durango Herald, and Grand Junction Sentinel on some experiments around, you know, for the newspapers, it's more of a subscription model. For the nonprofits, more of a membership model. But really, it's driving revenue toward journalism. And one of the things that is immediately apparent is that there's demand for the intersection of our different knowledge bases, right? So Brent Gardner-Smith knows water issues really well. He also happens to have a radio background, so it's great to have him on the radio. Mm-hmm. But there's this opportunity with these other outlets to sort of cross-pollinate. And I think that's one of the things we're going to be doing more of. It seems like with KD&K, early on when Raleigh and I reached out to you long before this position was available, you helped us make sure that all of our current talk shows, all of our public affairs programs are set up effectively as podcasts through the NPR digital system. So it seems like another thing that you could be bringing to this organization is the ability to expand on beyond what we have airtime for. I mean, KD&K could develop, for example, an R-rated podcast that's all about, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll that we couldn't play during the middle of the afternoon. Or you know, speaking of drugs, I mean, the cannabis industry, there's a ton of interest in news stories on that. But it's borderline how much of that we can do on right. a federally licensed station, right? So I think there are opportunities not only for adult content, but for a lot of different stuff. And so, you know, KD&K has the resources. We've got the studios. We've got the web platform. We've got the connections with, you know, Apple and Spotify and Stitcher and Google Play and all these kind of things. It seems like that's another area you could help us. And in video, I mean, at the end of the day, KD&K has got to turn on video cameras when we have bands in the studio. So I think that you know, your fearlessness around technology is going to be a huge asset to this organization. So
yeah, and I just want to go back to the thing you were saying about the skills. You know, you needing the skills of these different organizations. Just because that reminds me of when I was in the Isaacson School, and this was one of the things that they were telling us about new media. Is mm-hmm. they just use the word divergence.
Yes.
So bringing these different, all of these different platforms and skills together is really what new media is. And like you said, the infrastructure is here to transition into that and continue doing what has already been done. So that's really exciting.
Well, and Amy Haddon Marsh's work was just recently recognized by the Colorado Broadcasters Association. Both she and Walter Gallagher are regularly up for best in the state for their public affairs work. Her Valley Voices program was named best public affairs program in the state at the Colorado Broadcasters Association. Walter Gallagher's work with Immigrant Stories was basically the runner-up. So the two of them are the champions for this last year. And so we have quite a team here of producers, whether we think of ourselves as capital J journalists or not, right? So Brent and I, as the executive directors of our organizations, have to have some sort of firewall on some issues, but we can still produce good quality work. Amy Han Marsh, also joined by Raleigh Burley as another continuing news producer, even though his role is now program director. We're going to have to leave it there, guys. We're out of time for today. The show is booked. It'll be on every Thursday at 4:00. Stay tuned, because Heart Song with Raleigh Burley is coming up right after we hear from Bird Note, a new regular feature on KD&K, where every weekday afternoon you get to hear the sounds of birds. Check it out.